Today on Movie World, as we talk about a house with a clock in its walls, Night School and Venom. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello.
Hello.
Greetings.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
We say that because even though that bears no relation to when people will listen to this,
it's Friday for
it's
us.
It's the end of a long week. It's this is the first of two recordings we're going to do back to back, so we're covering six movies over the next two podcasts.
We've already watched six movies since we came back from Toronto.
More than that,
We watched some on our own.
So it's it's that time of year, right? Yeah. Again, we talk about this all the time, the movie cycle, and here we are, fourth quarter, things are heating up.
It's definitely heating up.
We never talked about the new Oscar category that came and went, but the best popular movie. So
we just ignored it and it took care of itself.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, yeah. I'm kind of glad about that, though.
I don't understand the point of it.
I don't think
anyone
did. It
seemed like a marketing ploy.
No, I think the point of it was that well-made, well-regarded popular movies get ignored for small independent movies that the critics fawn over. So good case in point. You know, The Dark Knight and Black Panther and, you know, those kinds of movies they wanted. Although actually,
and
the
then
Black
we get Moonlight winning. That correct. Is a very small movie.
Which was great.
Nobody's heard
which
of,
right? People like, but it's not a blockbuster, yeah. Right?
So they wanted to give recognition.
That's called the People's Choice Award, right? Yeah. Or
and that's what they were trying to do, I think.
Yeah. And my point is it's not that if it's a Dark Knight or Black Panther, it's not like it winning the Oscar is going to get it more business. They've already made a ton of business.
Because it was popular.
So they don't need greater exposure, but I guess they need to be celebrated.
Yeah.
Well, I think, the purpose of the Oscars is to celebrate excellence in film, right? So if an excellent film also happens to be, a crowd-pleasing blockbuster, it's somehow the way that the Academy Awards have been going is ignored because it's a blockbuster in favor of something that is smaller that maybe, the people who do this want to bring out. It's kind of like we always feel that responsibility, right?
Correct.
We want to, unearth the hidden gems. We want to get people to see movies that they may not have otherwise heard of.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I think the thinking is that the last time a big commercial mega hit one was Titanic. And it's been 20 years or whatever since then. So, but I think what happened is they announced it. And
we all
think
there were,
There was a big backlash. But I think the bigger issue that everybody kept bringing up is how are you going to define a popular movie?
Right.
Like, actually, the Black Panther people want their movie to get nominated in the regular category because they think they have a good chance. Whereas if they're competing with, any other.
The Meg.
Right, any other big blockbuster which opened this year. not the Meg.
Not the best choice there,
actually. Right? it was popular, it was fun.
Perhaps it was.
So anyway, I think they stumbled on how to define, does it have to have earned a certain amount of money and, all that stuff. So, anywho.
Okay. Anyhow.
So, sorry for the banter, but that was...
Can I just say one other thing? Which is that if you are in these parts in San Diego, this is film festival season. And they're back to back. And we are sore at the throat telling people, urging them to go attend film festivals, especially your local ones. They need you and you need them. And we have right now the most wonderful San Diego Italian Film Festival going on. It's not a high pressure film festival, only one movie a day. They're all at the MOPA, which is a beautiful auditorium in Balboa Park. And then very soon the Asian Film Festival is going to start. And sandwiched between the two is the regular San Diego International Film Festival, where a lot of the big name Oscar hopefuls will be shown. So if you are in San Diego, there is something for you if you want to catch up early on the Oscar movies, big budget movies, smaller ones, Asian, Italian. It's all there. And it's all coming at you.
And actually, the San Diego International Film Festival has a really good selection this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get to see films like Widows, and Yazdi and I are going to go and watch our friend Yorgos Lanthimos in The Favourite, Joe Escapes.
and then but there's a lot of yep. be shown. Yeah, there's a lot of
ones that we saw in Toronto.
Yeah,
no, that's great. And
I just heard Vox Lux, the new Natalie Portman that's getting a lot of press, is also going to be playing. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I've seen a couple of great movies at the San Diego one in particular. Lion is the one that springs to mind.
Yes, we saw Lion there.
And Call Me By Your Name we saw last year there as well.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Gosh.
And the year before we saw the movie about that British painter, remember?
Mr. Turner, which was good. He had a little bit of a grimace on his face. He was like, "Oh, we saw that.
It was too long. No, it's great. It's too real. That was the problem.
It was.
It hurt.
Yes.
But anyway, yes. And we all have a personal bias towards the Asian Film Festival, which we think is the best of all the San Diego ones.
Yeah.
But anyway, go watch.
It's the most unexpected. It's a wonderful little. Treasure trove of things that you will either love or you know react badly to, but there's always something to talk about.
I mean all of the movies coming out of like, you know, Taiwan and China and Korea and Thailand, and they're really good movies. Yeah. There are some amazing movies. And I love how you don't get this in Hollywood movies. They manage to really combine ethereal, spiritual stuff in kind of everyday happening really well.
Yeah, the incorporation of souls and the other life is very casual. It's very nicely woven in. You know, they don't have to explain it too much.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that's not what we were bantering about.
And Rashmi, you were the juror last year.
I was the year before,
so we have a particular fondness. Correct. For it. It's a great show.
It's a really hardworking festival, is what I would say.
Yeah. Brian Hu and Glenn Heath and all those people.
Pacific Arts. Big shout out to them.
They worked their butts off to get us the best film festival.
Great job, guys. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Three movies for us to talk about this week. Should we hit them up in order?
Yep.
So let's start with A House with a Clock in Its Walls.
Very strange title, as Yazdi said to me before you went. Action. Okay, so this is a young orphan named Louis Barnevelt aids his magic uncle in locating a clock with the power to bring about the end of the world. Sounds a little bit Marvel-esque to me. Mm. If you substituted clock with stone. But anyway, this is directed by Eli Roth. Yes, that Eli Roth that of Eli Roth. Cabin Fever fame, and it's written by Eric Kripke. But it's actually based on a book by John Bellairs, and it stars Jack Black, Kate Blanchett, and Owen Vaccaro. And I really wanted to see this one, but unfortunately we missed the screening that night. So Yazdi, you were the only one that saw this. Is this worth our time?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't rush out and watch it, but it's definitely worth your time. It's very good company.
It's a wonderful cast.
It's a wonderful cast. Jack Black. And I originally thought, I mean, the reason why I wanted to see it was Jack Black and Kate Blanchett. And I thought, oh, this is probably the Jack Black show and Kate Blanchett just shows up here and there. But no, she's there in the movie. She's like a proper co-lead. It's trying to be kind of like Goosebumps. It's trying to be about, you know, kind of a children's movie with a little bit more adult content in it. Some of the themes in the movie, I think, are pretty strong. And I think if you're less than, I don't know kids these days, but I found some of those scenes pretty darn scary. So I'm not scary like I'm going to lose my sleep scary, but I'm thinking if I was a, you know, 7 or 8 year old, I'd have nightmares about this stuff.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, it's fun. It's a children's movie. There are enough jokes for the adults as well. And you watch something like this and you realize the value of good actors.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Black does a little bit too much grandstanding and he's just being Jack Black and almost, you know, a few times crosses over into being annoying. But you watch somebody like Kate Blanchett and you realize why we have Kate Blanchett.
And we haven't really seen Kate Blanchett in a more fantasy type movie, right? So I'm kind of interested to see how Ragnarok. She'll come across. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. But here she's playing kind of this Which one? Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
Okay, I take that back.
But she's so effortless here. And, you know, yeah. She kind of starts off being somebody with questionable, you don't know where she sits. Is she evil? Is she good? Mm. Is she going to help? Is she going to be a problem? And she, her character goes through a nice little transition. She has her own backstory, but a lot of it depends on the interaction between her and Jack Black.
Right.
They're driving the movie forward. And she just makes it all work. I don't know how else to say it. Every line reading is plausible, even in a story about, you know, this warlock who was dead and he left, you know, a clock in the wall, and the clock has all these histories, and some of it is very creepy. But, you know, even in that kind of incredible, fantastical setting, she really does her job well.
I mean, Jack Black is an interesting one for me. When I think about his filmography and I'm just looking at it, a lot of it is, you know, cartoon, voice, character, fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. But the times I've liked him the most have been when he's playing, like one of my favorite movies is Bernie.
Mm, yeah,
which Richard I Linklater's absolutely movie, loved. Yeah. Sorry,
Richard Linklater's
movie. Yeah, such a good movie. Yeah. And I really liked him in Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. So I actually like Jack Black when he does a bit more alternative, serious box, stuff. Yeah. Yeah, but
and Eli Roth, you know, he's made a name for himself as a director. You know, for making mostly horror movies. I think he did some of the. Did he do one of the Saw movies? But he definitely did Cabin Fever. He did, he acted in Inglourious Basterds. He made Hostel movies, the Hostel, Hostel 1, Hostel 2. So, you know, it's interesting that Hollywood kind of entrusted him with this children's property. And I think that the movie is as scary as it is because of him, because he can't resist it. And I kind of like that. The other thing I also liked about the movie is that the central character is this little boy who, you know, has, through a turn of events, bad things happen to his parents and he has to come live with his uncle. And the movie kind of celebrates the fact that he's a misfit.
Hmm.
And so, you know, right all the way to the end, it's kind of... saying it's okay to be weird. It's okay to not fit in with all the other kids in your school. So I think in the current environment where there's so much polarization, I think it's good for a movie to have its heart in the right place saying, hey, if you're a kid and if you're, you know, if you're not fitting in with the in crowd, it's okay.
You're okay, yeah.
So sum up and give us a score.
So I'd give it a 6 out of 10. Maybe if I was feeling more generous, a 7. But the production design is excellent. The sound design is also very good. Kyle MacLachlan plays the bad guy, and you know he's unrecognizable, but you know he makes a really nice nemesis. And you know the premise of the movie is that Jack Black's character, you know, is also a warlord, and then maybe I'm giving things away, but Cate Blanchett is like she's like a witch, and you know it's kind of cute and funny and. I don't know. And the production design in particular, there's this, you know, his mom comes, the little boy, the mom comes in his dream and says, don't ever, open. No, it's the other way around. She says, all your secrets will be found in this locked cabinet. And the production design for that locked cabinet is so beautiful. I mean, it's genuinely creepy in the way you have to reach to it and so forth. So, it's well realized. I think if the movie were tighter, it might have been genuinely great. But I think it's above average, so 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good stuff. Movie number 2 of the week then is Night School, and this comes from director Malcolm D. Lee, who I'm just looking at his filmography here. I mean, he goes back a while. I mean, he did a movie called The Best Man in 1999, a movie called Undercover Brother, which I thought was really fun around 2002. Did movies, The Barbershop, and then last year's very well-received movie, Girls Trip, which unfortunately I didn't get to see. We missed a screening for that movie. Was extraordinarily well received, and here he comes again with a movie called Night School. This time he brings Kevin Hart And he, Tiffany Haddish, Rob Riggle, Taron Killman, Romany Malco, other names that I will continue to destroy if I keep talking about them, but you can look them up. And the premise of this is basically a group of misfits are forced to attend night school classes to, in a long shot, that they'll eventually pass their GED. So it sounds like a nice contrivance for some hilarity. This movie is very clearly billed as a comedy. Based on the trailers, Kevin Hart and others. I didn't get to see this one. I know the two of you did. So tell us all about Night School.
Okay, so when you see Kevin Hart on any poster, you just know what you're in for. And this is exactly what it says on the box. And if you go with zero expectation, I think this is a super fun caper that plays with type and expectation in a really funny way. To me, this was like a big bowl of disposable cream in a can. It's fun to squirt in your mouth and it's full of empty calories. I really enjoyed this. It was just fun.
I had high expectations from this. Well, because Tiffany Haddish, you know, and then...
Girls Trip.
And, you know, she's returning with the same director, and then Kevin Hart, the two of them have never been together. So it didn't meet those expectations. I don't think anybody's going to call this movie particularly sophisticated or clever or edgy.
It's got a very slapstick premise. I mean, it really does.
It is, but you know, it feels like a good sitcom episode. Really good. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And actually, I don't know, I'm going to date myself, but there used to be this show on television a long time ago called Mind Your Language.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was in the UK.
I don't think it ever came to the United States.
Okay, yeah. Well,
it came to India.
Far too politically incorrect.
Yes. But it kind of reminded me of that. It was a group of misfits who all come together, and it's very politically incorrect. It completely barters and stereotypes. But in this one, it's the same thing. There are five or six people who have come to night school. Each one has their issue, and they all have to, you know, figure things out. Kevin Hart is Kevin Hart. He's very enjoyable.
He's very enjoyable.
You know, that's where we go. You know, he makes a lot of money, but he might want to start doing something
just
different.
Broadening his CV.
I mean, I think Tiffany Haddish and Kevin Hart together, it's kind of like competition of the shouty, but it's kind of fun to watch.
No, it is fun.
They are very equal, right? They're very equal, and they're well matched in the relationship they're put in.
Right.
And I just enjoyed the stereotypes, but then they get knocked on their head, which is really funny. And there's this whole scene where there's like a prisoner who's also coming in by Skype to the night school. I mean, it's more hardworking than it needs to be in my book.
Yeah.
But again, I had zero expectation because I hadn't seen the Girls Trip. Yeah.
And then my only other minor complaint is you're bringing back Tiffany Haddish for her first big movie after her breakout in Girls Trip. And you're asking her to be kind of the straight man. So she kind of, you know, she plays the school teacher at this night school that he's going to. So she has to be responsible, and, you know, so she's kind of constrained. I wanted her to kind of just, you know,
let loose
a little bit more. So I felt like it was a little bit of a wasted opportunity with her. But look, I mean, back of an airplane, go for it. You'll have many laughs.
Yeah. You sound like you were going to sum up.
Yeah, 6 out of 10 for me. I liked, you know, the class, Marilyn Ratscup, who used to be in 24. She's here.
She's so funny.
She's very good.
She's so funny.
Taron Killam, who is on SNL, he's there. But Rob Riggle was really, really good.
He's got a cute name. Rob Riggle.
Mackenzie, right? No. Yeah. Oh, you mean in real life. Right,
yeah.
Right. But... Yeah, it's not rocket science. 6 out of 10. What would you give?
Yeah, it's highly predictable, but it doesn't make the journey any less enjoyable. I really enjoyed this one. 7 out of 10.
Okay.
It's a really good, fun Friday movie.
Yeah, it looks... I mean...
It's just silly.
It could have been so much more.
Of course, it could be. Right, it could be, but...
I get the sense that this is one of those movies where the best jokes are in the trailer.
No.
No, it's okay, funny. Good, okay. Because it's taken a little bit of a kicking from the critics.
It's done terribly on the tomato meter, but I
that
honestly...
Makes it, it just makes it sound a lot worse than the experience that the two of you had.
Yeah, I mean, Back to School, another movie it reminded me of. Reminded me of Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Mind Your Language. There's a lot of that going on.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Then let's move on to our final movie of the week, which is Venom. So, Yazdi, can you tell us about Venom?
Yes. So, the great omnipresent Marvel Universe, which is threatening to engulf everything about Hollywood. This is the latest entry in Marvel Universe, although I believe this is not a Marvel movie because Venom itself, the character, is part of Sony, just like Spider-Man.
You're right. That's right. It did say Sony. Right. I noticed that.
What a pickle.
What a pickle. So I think, I don't understand the specifics. We should ask somebody like Shanks, but I understand that the rights to the Spider-Man universe and all the characters within the Spider-Man universe are owned by Sony, even though Spider-Man is part of the Marvel universe. So go figure. But this movie is kind of an origin story for Venom, which, as I understand it, is the story of some kind of a creature called a symbiote, which can only exist in goo form, but it gets, you know, full incarnation of its evil self when it invades the body of a human being. And this journalist, played by Tom Hardy, who is a nice person, gets infected by the symbiote and he becomes Venom. Right? Did I miss anything?
No, you nailed that.
Okay, perfect.
I was going to say, for a non-comic book geek, that was pretty good. Spot on.
And it's directed by Ruben Fleischer, who I just saw. Also has made...
Zombieland.
Yes, he made Zombieland.
I love Zombieland.
He made Gangster Squad years ago with, what's his name, with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. The movie kind of is getting a bit of a beating in the press. I'm surprised because it came with a lot of fanfare. So, like I said, the movie stars Tom Hardy. It also has Michelle Williams, who we haven't seen. Although we did see her in that Amy Schumer movie.
I really liked her in that,
She was so good.
I Feel Pretty.
I Feel Pretty, yes. And Riz Ahmed, who is popping up all over the place these days. Everywhere. I understand he plays the bad guy. So there's that. And so the writing credits are like, you know, there's eight people. Jeff Pinker, Scott Rosenberg, Kelly Marshall, Todd McFarlane, and David Michelinie. So I missed this one because I had play tickets. Was it a blessing in disguise? Oh, Woody Harrelson is here. And so is Jenny Slate and Melora Walters. So
anyway. Very briefly.
Yes. Okay, what do you guys think?
So, I mean, you know, I got pulled into some of the hype with this one because they have been pushing this movie very hard pretty much the whole year. The Venom art direction, the monster, or the anti-hero, I guess, in this case, has been, you know, on posters and billboards, and the trailers have been... I feel like I knew so much about this movie... in terms of its visual style going in, I was kind of excited because I do think that the movie visually, in terms of how it renders Venom, you know, this Spider-Man kind of anti-hero, if this had been a horror movie, the Venom mask would have given me absolute nightmares for years. It's truly horrifying, and it's rendered so well. So going into it, I was kind of excited. I did feel like it'd been hyped up to some extent. And I also knew that Ruben Fleischer directed Zombieland. So even though he had a couple of turkeys, I felt that this kind of darker world might be a bit more of a fit for him. And the movie's just a little bit of a mess. And I say a little bit, that's an understatement. It's just got a lot of things that it's trying to do. None of them it does particularly well, other than the visual things. Tom Hardy is busting his ass. He is so... earnest in the way that he depicts this character, this kind of bumbling journalist type character, but he also does the voice of Venom very well, the chemistry, the comedic timing. He's working so hard, but he's got some horrible things to do and horrible lines to deliver. And so consequently, I won't say that I hated the movie. I mean, I think it was, you know, very disposable, kind of back of the airplane type fun. But, you know, given the art direction and given the potential, I think, of this franchise, I'm not a huge Marvel World you know, fan, but I do feel like this character has so much potential to make a truly great movie. The idea of this symbiote inhabiting the body of somebody else and the two of them having to work together to, you know, fight. So it was crushingly disappointing. And I want to like it more than I did. So I feel a little bit more positive than I think the movie deserves, but that's just because I feel like this kind of dark superhero is my flavor of things.
What Joe said.
Oh, wow.
So the poster actually says the world has enough superheroes, but I don't think this is necessarily an anti-hero or a baddie.
Well, he tends to eat people's heads. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Sure, but I mean, that aside, I think, as you said, Joe...
It's not a Superman thing to do.
I know, but it's not the baddie that goes around destroying the world on purpose either, right? Sure. So to me, it's really Tom Hardy's charm that saves the movie, which is overall rather disposable. Mm. And it feels very short. I just looked up the running time. It's 112 minutes. It felt like a 1.5 hour movie.
But that's
I know, but now we're so used to having these 2 hour epics that...
You know why it didn't feel that long? Because we didn't stay for the 18 minutes of credits.
There you go. There you go. So I think the beginning of the movie really reminded me a little bit of Rampage, you know, where a spaceship crash lands and then there's something strange in it, right? So it's exactly that same beginning.
Yeah, actually, that's a very good point.
And then it kind of rushes along being hyper violent and action packed, but not in a good way. And it's not so thrilling in terms of the action. It's just a lot of things happening, like almost like a, yes, you would describe it like a Michael Bay movie. You would describe it like a Transformers movie. There's just a lot of action and things flying, and then there's destruction.
And so, I mean, just to add to that point, the action scenes are truly clumsily choreographed. It's crash bang.
It's just dull.
It's not buildings being smashed but they're just, it's hard to tell what's going on. And there's a scene when there's a scene where there's two Venom-like characters going at each other. And I didn't feel like they were really, I couldn't tell how the fight was working. I couldn't tell who was winning or losing. It just kind of fizzled out to this strange end.
And
it was so unsatisfying because you see these beings that are very powerful within Earth's, you know, gravity, and it just felt very unimaginative.
Yeah, and so what's really weird, that's a great point. So the character doesn't make sense in the universe, right? Because this character could basically destroy Earth very quickly, yet Tom Hardy has to fight hundreds and hundreds of, you know, either henchmen or SWAT officers, so right?
It doesn't logically hold up
because this character could annihilate them in a second, and yet, you know, there's all this turmoil and destruction. And I think the tongue and look of Venom was a little bit too adult for me. Like, it looked a bit phallic. Sexual. I didn't quite like...
The tongue?
Yeah, I didn't like it. But I did like, look, it's trying to be relevant, but I think there isn't enough story to carry a whole movie. And so what we end up with is a really big middle with hardly any middle, a really big beginning and very little middle and kind of a fizzle out to the end.
And why did they hire Michelle Williams? I mean...
Yeah, what a waste.
She doesn't... I mean, I can see why you want a good actress to carry that role, because... You know, she has to be the anchor for the Tom Hardy character. Right. But what they did with her plot-wise was horrible. And, like, kind of, they put her in a situation where she shouldn't care at all about the character that she's then responsible for, you know, bringing back to, you know. So it was just...
It's poor. It's very poor effort.
As good an actor as she is, she couldn't mask the cheese that was the dialogue in this movie. Yeah. And that's too bad.
It's a good paycheck.
Because she looks a little clumsy. Yeah, it is. I mean, I can only think that she does,
on the beach,
you know, the small movies to, you know,
right, one,
to you know, that are a passion, right, and then the others to pay the rent.
Yeah. So I can sum this one up. Look, I found the whole setup so incredibly ridiculous and think that there was just a ton of crash bang wallop to make up for a lack of story. This isn't poisonously bad, but not great by a long shot. I'd say I feel generous. 5 out of 10.
Yeah, it's very clumsy. I mean, it really is. And it's too bad because it jumps from this comedic to dark. And, you know, we debate superhero movies a lot because of, you know, I think you guys like to pick on me and the fact that I like the darker flavor of superheroes. Whereas, you know, I know both of you are big fans of things like Guardians of the Galaxy and the Avengers because they're a lot more, the lighter, they're
more story.
And this movie, I think, couldn't decide which way it wanted to go. I think it has some of the tortured bad guy in it, but then, you know, he's also this goofy, wisecrack, you know, it could have been Deadpool. Like, I mean, even if you'd picked to do Deadpool,
some of the reviews were mentioning.
Oh, is that? Yeah. I mean, even if you'd picked that kind of tone and said, you know, to hell with this, we're going to go R-rated and we're just going to go bonkers mad with, because Venom is a very funny character.
Yeah.
I mean, he's genuinely, he's naive.
He's charming.
Because he's naive as an alien, but he also has that kind of, you know, why is it wrong to eat people's heads? You know, like there are those moments where, you know, again, Hardy's performance delivering that line brings out a genuine chuckle. But anyway, so kind of a mess. 5 out of 10. It's not horrible. I mean, honestly, I think if I get the chance to see this again in the back of an airplane or when it comes to Netflix, I'm going to sit through it. I didn't hate being there. I just felt that it was such a wasted opportunity, and that's too bad.
Yeah.
Sony, give back the IP to Marvel. They know what to do with this stuff.
Yeah.
Really, they do. All right, let's wrap up the podcast then. 3 more movies to talk about in our next episode. A Star is Born, The Sisters Brothers, and Bad Times at the El Royale. So I'm really excited to talk about that with you guys. And let's end the podcast now and get straight into that conversation. So until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.